The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. John O'Connor is going to join me here in a few minutes, former federal prosecutor. We're going to talk about Trump and his judges and his pro bono work that's supposedly coming with him, and judges saying, hey, you can't do that, President Trump. Who's going to win on this one? Now, since it is Conspiracy Theory Thursday, we always bring on Crazy Gene, or some days it's not so crazy Gene. How are you doing, Gene? What's on your mind?
I'm just as crazy as always.
Just as crazy as always. Good. Good. All right. So, what's on your mind, huh?
Well, I was just calling to say, well, there's no way we could have made it to the moon because of the radiation belt that surrounds the Earth would have fried the instrumentation in our vehicle and would have fried us, too.
The Van Allen radiation belts,
yeah,
right? That's what you're talking about. I have read theories about this for a long time. Of course, probably limited shielding in the Apollo. But you know what I say about this is that I watched it like everybody else, and I built my Saturn. I built a model of the Saturn V rocket, pal. Listen, okay? You know? Do you want to destroy my childhood myths just by talking about Van Allen radiation belts?
Radiation belt.
Yeah. So.
Well, Bill, that was a long time ago when you were a child.
Yeah, I know.
At this point in time, I'm sure you're strong enough to tolerate me telling you you were not with it back then.
Well. I know there are a lot of people have written on the we never went to the moon sort of thing, and I've read conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory, and maybe I think what if there's anything that gives some possibility of truth to this is that it was so long since we've ever gone back, and we make a big deal now about, you know, going out on Elon Musk's rockets and we're going to go to Mars and all the rest of this. Well, why should it be all that big of a deal if already been there before? All we have to do is just repeat what we did before. And heck, we supposedly went to the moon on computer power. That's the equivalent of a pocket calculator today. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
So
we were good, but then we could get by with just the minimum stuff. Where now we need the maximum stuff, and we can't get by.
Well, for the time being, though, it may be a myth, but I'm believing in my myth. Do you mind? Is that okay?
Well, okay, fine. Just go. Fine. I'm not going to argue with you about it.
Oh, I don't know. I know. I can't prove it one way or the other, but I don't know. We sure made a whole lot of drama back in the day if that was a big put on.
Well, look what Kennedy said. We're going to get to the moon before Russia does.
And we go to the moon because it's hard. We go to the moon because it is hard. He said something like that.
Yeah,
where's that effect?
That's
all right.
What he said. And, well, it was hard. It was so hard that we couldn't do it, but we made it look like.
All right. There you go. Crazy Gene for this Thursday. All right. Thanks, Gene.
Thank you.
You know, if you kind of have a little chuckle about that, what can you do, right? It's 11 after 7. John O'Connor joins me. Proud to have John O'Connor back on. Of course, a long-term federal prosecutor, author of Postgate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and began today's partisan advocacy journalism. He's also host of the Mysteries of Watergate podcast, served as assistant U.S. attorney in Northern California, represented the United States in criminal and civil cases, and I don't know, John, do your eyes glaze over when you look at the conflicts in the judiciary, between the judiciary and the current administration? What say you this morning? Welcome back to the show. Good morning.
Well, we've got 12 million immigrants in here that are illegal.
Right.
At least. That's probably modest. Now, the question is, let's say, this is just a little exercise for the audience, let's assume someone went across the Rio Grande and is still sopping wet. No one would have any problem with a border guard picking the guy up, putting him in a rowboat, and putting him over on the other side.
So, sure.
Sorry, this is a border. You can't come in here. Mm-hmm. You don't have to. You shouldn't have to call in a judge and say, Judge, I just caught a guy, and I just want to make sure he has a due process hearing before we return him. Now, and people say, well, that's absurd. You know, this is a border. You don't have hearings at the border. This is all over the world. You just don't do that.
But we have federal judges that are now equivalently ruling this way, though, correct?
Well, that's my problem. Now what happens is some guy's now immigrated. They didn't catch him, or he's a getaway. He's been around for a couple of years or 10 years. Now you want to do the same thing. The courts say, oh, well, you got to have your due process hearing. We know that it's a due process hearing. Well, wait a second. Who says that you have a due process hearing before you leave? If you have any argument, as the Supreme Court suggested in the case with the Boasberg's case with the larger group, you've got something called a writ of habeas corpus. You can always bring a writ of habeas corpus, which is what prisoners do at the same time to try to get out of prison. Mm-hmm. They file a writ of habeas corpus. But they don't need to be in court physically. And the judge's clerk can deal with them, or whoever it is that deals with them. They can just, you know, do whatever, deny it, whatever. Have a hearing if they think there's compelling evidence in the petition. But I think what happens is in the way things go that I think these judges want to be fair. The normal process is for other disputes is that before you take away someone's right or their property, you have a due process hearing. This is not that situation. I mean, it's like me coming up to a court and saying, I want a due process hearing. You know, my wife's been mad at me, and I don't think she's, you know, she's right. I want a due process hearing mm-hmm. before she does anything. Well, what right do I have to that? What right does someone have? And maybe that's a bad analogy because my wife's not the federal government. But the point is, I think the judges are applying a concept that doesn't fit for border and immigration. I think they're very well-meaning, want to be fair to everyone. It's just fairness gone amok, because the more you are go out of your way for individual wrongdoers, the whole body politic suffers. And it's one of our problems today with the kind of morality. We don't think of the morality of the harm to the whole. The whole of us, the whole body politic suffers when one person gains all the attention and resources of a government.
And depending on who you're talking about, John, the numbers of illegal immigrants in this country right now, you're talking about 11, some are saying 20, others are saying really as many as 30 million. And if you go even with 11 million, are you trying to tell me that we're supposed to have 11 million immigration trials and hearings before judges to get rid of people who never were supposed to be here, were never authorized to be here in the first place? And
yes.
And I think that that Vice President J.D. Vance ended up putting up a post on X talking about this. And the morons that were responding to him and said, hey, you can't ignore the Constitution either, J.D. You know, and this is where they were all coming from. And it astounds me that under this this guise of fairness, as you were talking about, that we find ourselves in this situation. What it was just the other day. Judge blocked Trump from revoking the legal status for 530,000 plus of these people who flew into the U.S. under Biden's program. Now, the thing is, Biden made that up. He just made that whole thing up. And then when you try to unmake it up, now we have to have immigration hearings? It astounds. You know, where do we move forward on something like this, John? John O'Connor?
Here's the way I look at it. Those people in favor of these hearings look at the Due Process Clause, and it applies to persons, not citizens, persons. No person shall be deprived of blah, blah, blah with that due process of the law. Now, the problem with that is the question is not whether these people are persons. They are persons, but they're not being deprived of anything to which they have a right.
Ah, it, you see, that's the important part. You did not have the right of presence in the United States to begin with. Is that where you're going?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And so when, for instance, so when Obama, he thinks he's going to be real clever, so he avoids the legislature to keep all these people in the country by coming up with DACA. Well, all DACA is his executive discretion not to prosecute or take action against these young kids. So it's called delayed action. Well, That's his discretion, but that's discretion that can be taken away by the next person to sit in that seat. It's his discretion to say, I'm not going to prosecute these guys. Well, you don't have a right to that. The president cannot, with a stroke of a pen, just say you have a right to stay in. No, but he stretches his authority to say, okay, I'm telling my law enforcement people not to take action. He can do that. You can tell the Justice Department, I don't want you to prosecute crimes for the next month.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't give the person who benefits from that a right. They are simply the recipient of, I will call it, the grace, the discretion of the executive. But there's no right created. If there's going to be a right created, it should be a right created by the legislature, not by the executive. The executive has power, and that's what Trump wants. He wants executive power the same way Biden and Obama exercise their discretion, executive power, to let people in. But that doesn't mean you're giving them a right. That takes legislation. So they don't have a right to be here, and merely because these folks said, come on in, the weather's fine, doesn't mean that they get a hearing before they leave. So I think there's the way out of this is to say simply everybody has a right to file a petition for habeas corpus. But meanwhile, we're getting you. There's nothing wrong with the executive taking the opposite action to Biden and Obama and getting them out of the country. Okay, now if you think we did it wrongly, okay. You know, then file a petition. If you think you got some kind of a vested right, maybe in the meantime somebody gave you a green card, okay, it's our mistake, you had a green card. Now we'll look and see whether or not you did anything to deserve losing your green card. Now that's another matter. And that's the only thing, the only fly in the ointment is that one single guy who a deportation judge said, okay, you can be deported anywhere but El Salvador. Well, and that was based upon his belief, which now, is probably BS.
Is this Boasberg you're talking about, John?
No, this is the second case. This is the second case with the female judge from Maryland. This is the one guy.
Is this Garcia?
Yeah, Garcia.
The good family man in Maryland, right?
The good family.
The MS-13 gangbanger, right? This guy. Okay, right?
Right. Now, he's a terrible guy, but he did have he had the right, I suppose, because of this prior ruling, not to be deported to El Salvador. At least that was the order of the judge before. And so the issue is, I suppose, the government should have taken the step to undo that order, or they could bring him back and deport him to Tierra del Fuego or something. But so that's a little bit different, because in that case they could argue, well, because a judge has ruled, that gives you some right in that ruling. Not to be deported to any place to El Salvador, but even then, you have the issue of, well, that doesn't mean he has that right forever and ever. If he does something in the meantime, if conditions change, we can change that. Now, again, you're getting into technicalities. I think probably the better part of it, to be very frank, is to say that, you know, somewhere a judge ought to rule that, you know, that it's okay to deport him to El Salvador. You know, I think Andrew McCarthy feels that way of National Review and so forth. I think probably technically that guy's in a class by himself. So
the Maryland man may have a case, but everybody else, of course, at this point, though, there supposedly we have this judge is ready to prosecute the federal government or prosecute. I don't know how you prosecute the federal government for defying this order and not bringing back the Maryland man, the MS-13 gangbanger Garcia to the United States.
He's not prosecuting for that single person. That's the interesting thing. That's the fly in the ointment, is that single person, but that's in a Maryland court. The Judge Boasberg, who has the bigger case. I just read his opinion. It took me a while. It's a 46 pager about why he's right and why, even though the Supreme Court says that the proper venue for this is habeas corpus in Harlingen, Texas, and not the case in Washington, he says, well, even though it's the wrong court, I'm going to spend the next 46 pages telling you why I still have power to punish you guys for criminal contempt.
No, wait a minute. The Supreme Court smacked him down, correct?
Right, right.
And Boasberg is saying, I'm going to continue anyway? Really?
Yeah. Well, no, he didn't say he's going to continue the case anyway. He says, I have jurisdiction to find that while you all were in my court, you defied my mighty orders, and therefore I can find you in criminal contempt for willful disobedience of the order, of my order. And, you know, he puts out evidence about the court, the government. Really, frankly, he has a case there. If he really should have had the case to begin with. And so it's a very technical ruling that, hey, during that half a second that I had the case and before the Supreme Court slapped me down, I had jurisdiction over the case, even though it was only temporary, as it turns out. And even if it turns out that I didn't have the correct jurisdiction, I had it until the Supreme Court took it away from me. Therefore, I'm holding you all in criminal contempt. And I want you to purge yourself of the contempt by bringing these guys back from El Salvador.
Are they going to do this? Can they really can this inferior court judge, when I say inferior, it's a lower level court, actually force the Supreme Court and the president to bend to his will? Can he actually do that, you think, John?
Well, he's not bending. He would say he's not bending the Supreme Court to his will. He's bending the federal government. He's saying, of course, the Supreme Court's correct, and of course, this habeas corpus petition can go forward in Washington, D.C. But nonetheless, you screwed me up. You offended me while you were here. You didn't do what I told you to do, and you disobeyed my order. And that's what contempt is. You disobeyed my order several times and willfully, and you gave me nonsense answers. I'm holding you in contempt. So it's a very technical decision. I would even here's the real problem at the root of it. I mean, I think he's actually correct now. Why he bothers to do this and why he bothers? People would say, well, why does Trump bother to take on these judges and start all these fights? Well, this judge is really starting a fight here. He should just have the good grace to dust himself off and say, okay, I was wrong to say the plaintiffs had jurisdiction in my court. I should have said you have to go someplace else and file a writ of habeas corpus. He used another basis, and the plaintiffs cleverly, trying to avoid having to go to Texas, used another way of challenging. They challenged the designation, Trump's original proclamation. They didn't challenge the actual imprisonment of these guys. They challenged the proclamation under which they were imprisoned. So the judge went, ha-ha, that's really clever. You did it right, so you can stay in my court, because we're now dealing with the underlying proclamation under the Alien and Sedition Act. Ha-ha-ha, I have jurisdiction. And the Supreme Court says, no, you don't. You don't have jurisdiction. You never should have taken it. This is habeas corpus. This proceeds in Harlingen, Texas, from now on. That's where the people were picked up. That's where they're arrested. That's the proper venue for, for habeas corpus. So what I'm saying is he's picking a fight that's a very technical fight.
Does the Trump administration win this technical fight with Boasberg, you think?
Well, the question is that what I would say is Boasberg doesn't think he thinks he has the right to do this. I'm not so sure it's ripe for appeal yet. I don't know if the government appeals this decision or not, or they wait until he tries to hold them in contempt and then they appeal it. Here's the real problem, Bill. Boasberg is now testing separation of powers. Trump, to be fair, especially in the Garcia case, was testing separation of powers, saying, I don't care what you, a judge, says, the deportation judge says, we can deport this guy. Now, in the Boasberg case, I think it's Boasberg who's testing the limits unnecessarily of the separation. Remember, there is, and Boasberg hinted at it in his opinion, but he jumped right over it. He says, yes, there is some area of action by an executive branch that is unreviewable by a court and is not subject to legislation either. And that executive power is one, Bill, that is not defined. You can't go to a a case because there's an area in which the executive gets to make the decision unreviewable by anybody else. Now, the question is, who decides what's in that executive power? Thomas Jefferson, Andrew Jackson, Abraham Lincoln, to name three, felt that there was that area, and other people have felt the same way, and scholars have felt that way. And if it is within that ambit of executive power, then it isn't reviewable by a judge. A judge, and this is the quandary, because if the executive is right, you can issue all the 46-page decisions you want. You're doing it with a robe on. You're a judge, and you're saying, it's my decision, and here I'm going to write this decision. No, you don't get it. You don't get to make this decision. It's the executive's decision. So decide all you want. It's not yours to decide.
So you just ignore it. Okay.
The problem is, who decides? So who actually decides? Who gets to decide? That's completely left out by the framers of the Constitution.
John, that's why I had you on, but I have to tell you, I can understand people being real confused, because I sure was confused at watching this. So this battle will be playing out. And by the way, is there any precedence for the Supreme Court to actually go to a lower court judge and say, by the way, would you show up in Washington, D.C. so we could cane you in the public square? Can we just do that?
Well, of course, he's there. He's in D.C.
Oh, that's right.
Court's there, and they can just go down the street and cane him. But basically, it's if you read the decision and you really are a judicial, you think the judges should decide all these things, and that they should decide in the first instance whether the executive gets to make the power. I say this is a conflict as old as time. That's the thing. It's like the old saying of Andrew Jackson. Well, the Supreme Court has made
its
their
decision.
Order. Let's see if they enforce it.
Yeah, exactly. Could it just come down to that, in which you just say, all right, go ahead and try to enforce it, Judge Boasberg?
That's right. That's right. That's what could happen. And it's they're saying that Trump, people say, oh, Trump's creating a constitutional crisis. I think Boasberg's the one, given the Supreme Court ruling. He's the one now that is naked of jurisdiction. He doesn't have it. It's the court said you were wrong. And he's saying, I know I was wrong, but during the time I was deciding whether I was right or wrong, I had jurisdiction.
Yeah, it was my case, and so you should have let me do it.
You should have let me, even though I ended up making the wrong decision. I still had it. I was acting in good faith as a judge, and you lied, cheated, stole, said that you let me, blah, blah, blah. So he might be right,
but what? I guess it's ultimately what we're talking about. Ultimately, what?
He was offended, and he's also offended by the fact that, of course, the President of the United States is going out saying he should be impeached. he's a human being saying, "Hey, buddy, I'm going to get you," rather than Trump saying, "Oh, the judge is a nice guy, but he's mistaken, poor guy."
Yeah. Okay, John. Thank you for trying to explain a very murky bit of legalese on this one. I always appreciate your talk for this reason. And you read the 46-page ruling, so I didn't have to.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I just wanted to thank you for that. Okay.
This is what I'd like to do. This is fun for me.
Okay. John O'Connor, once again, and the book, it's an excellent book, too. Got to get it. I picked up a copy not too long ago. Postgate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and Began Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism. John, thank you for your time. Thank you for your eye glazing over that brief, so you can kind of explain how we are in this situation right now. Okay. Thanks so much. Be well.
All right. Take care.
Okay. You too. It's 7:33 at KMED.
One of each, K4VIN016.
Independent and serving the Rogue Valley for over 40 years.
Hi, I'm Dwayne Barkley with American Rancher Garage, and I'm on KMED.
7:37. I was up working at a transmitter site yesterday, and a colleague of mine from a different group dropped by, and he was saying, Bill, how long are you going to keep doing this? Because, he knew I was 63 years old, and I said, gosh, I really don't know. I'm enjoying it, but, who knows? I don't know if I can continue doing it forever, but who knows? And so it just reminded me of Risa Ryan, who is going to be my guest today. She's on the phone right now. She's the CEO and founder of the Unretire Group. And Risa, it is a pleasure having you on. I think I'm intrigued by what you are offering over there, the Unretire Group. What is this? Because I'm not convinced that traditional retirement, frankly, the last thing I would want to do is to go out and play golf for 30 years. Okay. I would look at that as like a hell worse than death, in my opinion. But what are you thinking? Totally agree. Go ahead.
Totally agree. Bill, thank you so much for having me on. The Unretire Group is, it's actually a platform. And what we do is we connect retirees from the industry with companies who are looking for project-based talent. And, it, you know, right now we're just in the insurance industry because that's where I grew up and that's what I know. And that's where the people are.
Did you say insurance? Did you say insurance, Risa? I want to make sure your phone was a little soft. That's
why. Insurance. Yep. Sorry. Oh. Insurance.
Okay.
But that's, you know, that's reinsurance and that's brokers and agents. It's a huge industry. But, you know, there's a lot of pressure for us to bring this into financial services, to bring it into healthcare, to bring it into education. There are so many folks who have retired or are close to retirement that are just not ready to check out completely.
Hmm. I kind of thought that's what you meant by when you said the Unretire Group. In other words, I can't tell you how many times that there have been people that I have known or have read about that, all right, I got, here it is, I'm 67 or whatever it is, I'm retiring now, and then they drop dead of a heart attack in a week or two, you know?
Right, exactly. You know, it's interesting. I think work is, nowadays, it's kind of a bad word, unfortunately, and I think that the younger generation looks at it like it may not be the best thing, because for years, people have kind of worked to not work. Mm-hmm. And then the minute they stop working, they kind of realize that, yeah, you know what, this is my identity. It is who I am. And that's a good thing. Humans were made to produce. We're made to contribute. We're made to work together. And when you stop doing that, it kind of wreaks havoc. And it's, you know, the incidence of depression and depression rates, the studies have shown that it increases dramatically in the first couple of years of retirement. And, you know, that's unfortunate because it doesn't have to be that way. Companies need the skills and the wisdom and the talent and, you know, just kind of the institutional knowledge even from those more seasoned employees. And honestly, they're also less expensive than a full-time hire. So it's, you know, what I'm trying to do is change how people think of retirement and how companies think of retirees.
Now, the Unretire Group that you have right now, at this point, it's only for like insurance people that understand the insurance industry. Are you thinking about maybe expanding this to other ones like you had just
absolutely
mentioned? Hmm.
Absolutely. We get loads of interest from folks in the banking sector and the medical field as well. You know, there are nurses that are out there that might not want to work a typical schedule and would like the access to the jobs like we've got on Unretire.
And now, what would a nurse, are these mostly like online jobs of projects that you would offer at the Unretire Group?
Interestingly enough, like the nurses, it's interesting for insurance. There are a lot of nurses that are employed by the insurance industry.
Huh.
You look at workers' compensation, and there's a medical component to workers' compensation.
Oh.
When somebody, you know, slips and falls at work, they end up at the doctor, and you have a nurse that reviews the file and that recommends a course of action. Likewise with auto, you know, there are auto claims that have a medical component to it. So there is definitely a need for nursing skills on, you know, in the insurance industry, and certainly on the Unretire platform we'll have a place for them.
I'm intrigued by this. I really am. And I look forward to seeing more of these kind of things developing over the years, because a lot of people, especially if you like your job,
right,
okay,
exactly,
you maybe want to keep doing that. You don't want to have to do the 40, 50, 60-hour grind,
exactly,
though, right? And so you're able to do a pick and choose rather than everybody being a Walmart greeter. Is that kind of...
Right, exactly.
What you're getting at?
There's nothing wrong with being a Walmart greeter.
No,
that's wonderful. And board work is wonderful, and volunteering is wonderful. But the thing is, you got paid. Anybody in an industry, you got paid for 30 and 40 years to do what you're good at doing. Why? And if you liked it, like you said, why would you stop doing it? You certainly don't have to do it for, you know, 30, 40, 50 hours a week, and doesn't have to be a stressful job. But companies need those individuals to keep contributing, to mentor the younger generation, to train them, to just even show them kind of the softer skills that generation kind of has perfected. The younger generation needs that.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Now, which generation are you, by the way, Risa, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 61, so I think we're between baby boomers and whatever's the next one.
All right. Well, I'm that way too. I'm 1961, so I'm 63 years old. We're very close, okay. In that. Yep. In other words, these older generations at least understood the soft skills about showing up to work, being on time, how to interact with people, et cetera, et cetera.
I
don't want to talk on the phone, just text message, right? That doesn't work necessarily though, right?
Exactly.
when customers call.
Exactly. Yeah. And and it's things like understanding that, all right, there are times during the year or during the month or whatever where you're going to have to work late, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, when I was growing up, we would work until dinner time, go home and have dinner, and then go back to work. And that's not bad. Work is, there's dignity in work, and there's dignity in producing, in producing. And it's good for the younger generation to see these more seasoned folks doing that. It's important for the companies to create that culture. And honestly, it's just important for society in general.
Risa Ryan is the CEO and founder of the Unretire Group. How do people find out about that? What's the website for the Unretire?
Check us out at unretire.io.
Okay, unretire.io. Is that what that is?
Exactly.
Okay,
or
good.
Or you can just shoot me an email at risa@unretire.io.
Okay. Risa, I want to just touch in here. Given that people have looked at a few trillion dollars of wealth vanishing out of 401ks.
Yeah, exactly.
Over the last few weeks. Now, maybe that'll come back. I don't know. But there's been a lot of drama here. I'm wondering if that might be driving some people to say, well, I may not necessarily retire, or I don't have quite as much as I thought I did. So are you looking for those people? Are you thinking you're going to see more of that for that reason? I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. But, it's interesting. The inflation has gone up 23.6% since 2020. And, so those folks that retired in 2020 probably didn't bake in like 8% and 9% inflation into their plans that hit us for a couple of years there. Now it's leveled off and we're not seeing that. But absolutely, those folks who thought they had enough might be a little concerned on the inflation side. But then on the flip side of it too is your investments. Are you gonna see what you thought you were gonna see from your savings. And so I do think there's going to be some of that where people are kind of rethinking and saying, okay, you know what, if I just pick up a couple of gigs throughout the year, there's my vacation money. There's my Christmas money. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Not a bad thing at all. My brother, who's a couple of years younger than me, called me up the other day, and he'd worked for Airgas, that big Airgas company, national company. And they obviously wanted him out because, not only was he older, but he was quite outspoken. Let me put it this way.
Yeah.
Very, very competent. And they bought him out. And so he's going to go retiring May 1st. And you can tell when he called me and told me, it's like, well, there was a little bit of that, what am I going to do, thing.
Exactly.
And he said that he was going to do some volunteer work and take his skills, and that might be fine. But there are a lot of people like that.
Exactly. And, what's interesting, too, is that these folks, it used to be when you retired at 60 or like late 50s in 1960, you only lived like another 10 years if you were lucky. And you were retiring from you know, kind of difficult jobs, like physically difficult jobs, transportation and industrial.
Yeah, coal miner, things like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. You were tired. And so you looked forward to it. We're nowadays, we're retiring at 60 if you're lucky, and if you don't get offered a great package that you'd be an idiot not to take. So you retire at 60, and you're not tired because we've been working in these knowledge jobs, and you know, and we're fit. We're, you know, this generation has been mindful of exercise and good diets, and so, you know, we're in really good shape, and we're staring Ben down at a 30-year vacation because we're not dying 10 years after we retire. We're living another 30 years. And that's terrifying to me and to a whole lot of people. Like you said, what are you going to do? Play golf for 30 years or pickleball or, So there is no reason why people shouldn't be continuing to contribute and continuing to produce in their fields of expertise.
I think this is going to be a trend. I think you're at the cusp of that, or maybe cutting edge on that. And it's unretire.io is the website, and it is a company which connects retired professionals with companies, and they're looking for projects. And like, you know, we have a contract for a few weeks or a few days, whatever it is, things like that.
Exactly.
You can sort of pick and choose those kind of things. I think I think you've got something here. It's going to be a growing trend. I really do, because I don't think that overall, some people may have to unretire and. Well, that's one thing. Other people may just say, "Hey, listen, I would like to continue to be, to be productive too." And you're there. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you so much for having shared your thoughts on this one. And it struck me here. I know a lot of people that are kind of on that precipice. Like, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? Right.
You know? Exactly. Yep. Well, send them our way.
All right. Hey, Risa, pleasure talking to you. Thanks for being on this morning.
Thanks for having me, Bill. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. 770-5633-770-KMED. That was Risa Ryan. She's the CEO, founder of the Unretire Group. I find that just fascinating. I really do. Whatever's on your mind here, it is Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Of course, the Conspiracy Theory Thursday is maybe you will be forced to unretire. I don't know. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Freddy's Diner has a great menu, but there can be a downside.
11 to 2 on KMED, you're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
7:54, open phones for a bit here on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Diner 62 quiz next hour, by the way. 770-5633. Let me go to Lunatic Fringe. You wanted to talk a bit about the Trump and the judge thing. I was talking with John O'Connor about that a little earlier. How you doing there, Lunatic?
Fine, thank you, Bill.
Good.
I read an article on Vera Hedge yesterday that makes me doubt that Judge Boasberg has a heart that is in the right place.
Oh, yeah?
He has said that if the DOJ will not prosecute the criminal contempt complaint that he's considering lodging against the administration, he, Judge Boasberg, will appoint an attorney to do so.
Really? And to take John O'Connor, former federal prosecutor's point of view, that Boasberg may have had a case for that short time until the Supreme Court said, no, you don't really have jurisdiction. And he wants to move that forward, continue to do that, chip away at this? Really?
He wants to appoint an attorney to prosecute the United States government for a now debunked decision on his part, yes.
Yeah. Whoa. Impeachment to me sounds like the proper approach here, and yet I don't get that, do you?
I do. He's powered by ego, not by heart.
Yeah, it must be. Appreciate the call. Thanks for making that, Lunatic Fringe. 770-5633. Dave's over in the Iron Gate. Hello, Dave. How are you? Go ahead.
I'm doing good. He forgot that Donald Trump has the pardon pin. And first off, he has to name an individual that's in contempt. He can't just name the federal government.
Right.
And they don't have to tell him anything about that. There were several of those filings that weren't signed by any individual.
Hmm. Are you then implying that President Trump would then, if somehow by some weirdness that this were to move forward, right, that there would be a prosecution? It would have to be of President Trump. That's what the judge is saying, that, you know, the executive violated the rights of the gangbangers, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, except he has no power to do anything with with President Trump. He's trying to go after U.S. attorneys or, attorneys handling the case. Well, if he names them, is in contempt, Trump can just pardon him.
All right. Well, the pen may be coming out for a different reason. I appreciate the call. Thanks, Dave. 770-5633. Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Heard a good one? Anything else on your mind? Hi, good morning. Who is this? Hello?
Hello?
Hi, Gene. How are you?
Oh, I'm okay. But
good, good. Are you feeling grumpy or not grumpy today?
Well, I'm not grumpy, but I'd like to see that judge brought up on charges of treason.
Yeah.
I don't recall him having one vote to be the president, and he's trying to dictate to everyone in the country as to what he wants, not what is legal, and that makes him a treason.
Yeah, well, treason is a pretty high bar because, practically nobody gets charged with treason these days. I wish that weren't the case, but, you know, they don't tend to like to do that. But I don't know. Well, treason essentially is warring against these United States. That's sort of, you know, I don't know. You know, when you have a judge that is saying that the executive with executive power can't get rid of someone who never was allowed to be here in the first place, you could probably say that's warring against these United States, right?
Yeah, he is, because President Trump was elected. He was not.
Okay.
And since he has a D in front of his name, that makes him a wannabe dictator.
I don't know if he had a D. If I recall correctly, Boasberg was actually appointed by George W. Bush back in the day.
I thought he was appointed by Obama, or Biden won.
I better check that out. I could be wrong. Maybe I'm confusing my federal judges right now. You know, sometimes when you're spitballing, you know, you don't always get it right there. But, hey, I appreciate your call there, Gene. You have a great day, okay? Thank you. Treason. Yeah. Shade before 8 o'clock. This is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford. KBXG Grants Pass. We'll certainly continue a little bit later on here. We're going to have some open phone time. Captain Bill's going to join me. He was at a big documentary film festival recently, and Captain William E. Simpson there, they didn't win, but he saw some really good stuff there, and there was a lot of good conversation that they had there about the wildfire issue. Of course, he's there, and he loves his wild horses, and everybody loves his wild horses, et cetera, et cetera. We'll get you the latest on that and how he thinks we're going to go through yet another year of denying the facts that they're talking forest, 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 but it's really about grass, grass, grass. More on that coming up.
Since 1938, Blue Star Gas has been serving